I was going to ask you about reassurance and what's that look like in your own life. So I'll let you take it where you want to go and expound on that for us.
Failure and reassurance, I guess we could break that up into a couple of parts. I'll start with reassurance. I have learned that reassurance is futile. Seeking it is futile. It's a race to the bottom. And it's also overrated. As I said before, you know, I very rarely, if ever, let anyone listen to my podcast episodes before they go live. In fact, I can't even remember ever doing that except for the one I'm going to release tomorrow. And the reason why I did it for one reason. I got such a kick out of it. I wanted to see what the reaction would be.
So the question is, Frank, are you going to do that again in the future? Will you let someone listen? Or did you learn, hey, I'm not going to do that ever again?
It doesn't matter one way or the other. It just was interesting to me. I mean, one of the people was my wife, okay? And I got such a kick out of it. I wanted her to hear it, to see her response. And then another was a good friend of mine. I was enjoying it. I enjoyed the podcast episode so much, especially the spoof part, Josh, that I just wanted somebody else to share the joy. And of course, you know, when the one person did not respond to it at all favorably, it didn't bother me at all. That's going to happen too. I'm going to have people to say, this was the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And others are going to think it's absolutely beyond brilliant. I think that reassurance, as I said, it's futile. It's overrated. What reassurance conveys is everything is okay. What you have done is okay. And you are okay. And that, Josh, reassurance is a bottomless pit. You will never get enough of it. All right. So let's say I put this podcast episode out into the world tomorrow, which I plan to do, God willing. Some people may pat me on the back, give me high fives, and I may be reassured. But guess what? I'll need it again for the next podcast episode. I'll need it again for the next book. I'll need it again for the next article. And so it never ends. Therefore, my work is not dependent on reassurance. I mean, it's always nice to receive compliments. It's always nice to hear that, you know, your work, something you put out into the world, has positively affected somebody. But I don't need it. I don't depend on it. And something else I'll say to those of you who are listening, there is a very short delay between the compliment and the criticism. To put it in the words of Kipling, if you can receive compliments and criticism and treat those two impostors the same, then you'll be a man, my son.
Wow.
Yeah. That's powerful.
Yeah, it is. And there's a story in the book of Acts. Paul and Barnabas go into a city and they perform a miracle and the people are wowed and they start worshiping them and they're bringing out sacrifices. And 5 minutes later, after some people who were detractors of the apostles came into that town and trashed Paul and Barnabas, those same people who are going to worship, bow down to Paul and Barnabas, pick up stones in their hands and they're ready to kill those two men, Paul and Barnabas. So I have observed this throughout my whole life. You cannot put your trust in any kind of external validation. Reassurance is something that, again, it's futile to seek. You'll never get enough of it. And there's also a pause in many cases, not all, between the compliment and the criticism. People will love you up to the point where you offend them or you say something to them that bothers them. That's when they're ready to pick up stones and trash you. And this is the world we live in. And it's even bled into the Christian world.
When we talk about reassurance, I really identify with the word validation. Like someone needs validation on their message. How does that change, Frank, when you're in a mentor-mentee relationship or you're coaching someone or someone's developing for ministry or developing as a creator where they need some validation from their coach, or can we say even a spiritual father? What's that process look like? Because I believe those are two different things you're discussing, right? So I'm curious, from a spiritual fathering point of view, what does reassurance or validation look like there? And then what's the difference as you launch out with your own message?
If you have a mentoring relationship with a mentor, I still believe it is a mistake to posture yourself where you need, right, their validation. Because let me tell you something. First of all, every mentor, even the best, is flawed in some way. And secondly, It takes a rare person, Josh, not to become a Saul in the life of a David. And by that, I mean, there are many men who are extremely gifted and God has used them, but they have some insecurity that has never gone to the cross. And when they confront a person who they may be in a mentoring relationship with, who is just as gifted or more than they are, it takes a rare person who will not turn into a Saul and become become a mad javelin throwing king who wants to destroy the David. And so if you are someone who needs their validation, you're going to be destroyed. You're going to be crushed. You know, it's going to be game over for your ministry. So while you may appreciate the validation, right, to need it, to have it, to move forward is a huge mistake in my view. Now, what you do want to be is open to the feedback of your mentor, right? If you do have a mentor, and I am all for, and I believe strongly in mentor-mentee relationships. I've had several mentors throughout my life. And so the principle is scriptural. You know, Jesus trained 12, Paul trained workers in Ephesus, Timothy being one of them, Titus being another, and there were several others. Actually, there were nine altogether, eight main ones and a ninth. But the point being is that if you have to have that validation, you are skating on invisible ice. And you're going to basically sabotage yourself. Your only validation, your main validation, must come from the Lord. You must get it from Him. You cannot rely on the validation of others. That doesn't mean you ignore other people. That doesn't mean you don't listen to criticism. That doesn't mean you're not open to correction. But it ultimately has to come from your God. Because if it doesn't, then you are destroyed even before you begin.
Frank, that was incredibly powerful. And I'm sure that what you just stated right there is liberating someone that needs to hear it as they listen to this, because that's just, that happens. And I appreciate that Saul David example there. Powerful.
Can I add one point here? And this is related to reassurance. It has to do with being ready. Whenever I go to minister somewhere, my wife often asks me, she'll say, are you ready? Are you ready to deliver these eight messages in this conference? And my response is always the same. And I say, honey, I'm never ready, but I'm prepared. What that means is that to be ready means to be sure. You're sure of the outcome, but that's an impossibility. I cannot control the outcome, but I can be prepared, and the rest of it is on the Lord's shoulders. I have learned to be outcome independent. You know, I prepare, ruthlessly prepare. You know, Paul said to Timothy, be prepared in season and out. I care enough to prepare and put my passion and vision into words that can be easily comprehended, whether that's in a book, a blog post, a spoken message, a podcast episode, but I'm never ready, because ready is impossible. That means you're sure of the outcome. To be able to prepare as much as you can and then trust the Lord for the outcome is the way to go, because then you're basically free. You're free to share what you have on your heart because you're outcome independent. And that's hugely important for anybody who is in this business of ministry or being a creator. And I hope it helps some of the listeners.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. I love that breakdown. And I love your terminology there, being outcome independent. And that really aligns with what you shared earlier. And the way you create kingdom impact is you put it out there and then you leave the results with the Lord. It's like one plants, one waters, and the results are ultimately with what the Lord wants to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You quoted a passage I was thinking about, so you took it right from my mind. That's great. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, take us into failure. How do you deal with that?
Bruce Lee said famously, in great attempts, it is glorious to fail. And Babe Ruth said, never let the fear of striking out get in your way. I will say this, the person who fails the most usually wins. And let me decode that. It's alleged that Thomas Edison made 1,000 unsuccessful attempts at inventing the light bulb. At least that's what I've heard and read. A reporter once asked him, he said, Thomas, how did you feel to fail 1,000 times? How did that feel? And he replied and said, I did not fail 1,000 times. The light bulb was an invention with 1,000 steps. The point being is that the person who fails the most usually wins, because as long as you're failing, you're still in the game. And eventually you will succeed, eventually. All right. So, for example, my father-in-law just got a pool table. The measurements are professional size, so it's larger than the average pool table. And so every time I go visit him, I play pool with him. And the guy is better than me, okay? I will admit it. He's better than me. And he beats me all the time, and it's frustrating. So I keep failing, but you know what? We played so much that I finally beat him. And so if you're failing, if you continue to stay in the game, you will eventually win. Now, there is only one exception to that, and that's if the failure is so big that you're permanently ejected out of the game. For example, you commit murder in a heat of rage, you know, you kill somebody. Well, now you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison, so the game is over. Yeah, most failures are not fatal, right? But when you fail, you keep playing. And you learn from your failures, and your failures become life lessons. And those who lose are afraid to fail. Those who lose the game, they do so because they're afraid to fail. And so they quit because they don't want to fail. And in the Christian life, for those of you listening who are followers of Jesus Christ, God uses failure to birth humility in us. And humility is one of the greatest ingredients to receiving God's power and his blessing. The Lord humbles the proud, he exalts the humble. This is both in the Old and New Testament. So in the Christian life, failure is sacred.
That was amazing. Thanks for sharing that, Frank. I think that's a great reframe for how we see our failure. And it makes me look right now like, where have I failed, and where can I use more humility, or what's the Lord doing? So I think the internal prism we should look at this with for every man listening is to take that coaching approach and coach yourself and say, okay, where am I in God's process right now? What's he doing in my life? Where's his hand on my life? What's he shaping? What's he forming? And how and where am I being conformed into his image? So that was powerful. Thank you for sharing that. Well, Frank, let's pivot here to the people that listen that have a message, which I believe everyone has a message. You know, one thing I say on this show a lot is that every man has a mountain, and it's a place where you can exert and exhibit your influence. And for some of us, that's with a spoken word or a written word. But for those that have a unique message, or they have a message that they feel called to release to the world, how does someone start if they're at the beginning of that process?
Okay, I'm going to answer this as truthfully as I can. I have no other motivation but to help people with this question, because if I was just starting out, I would want someone to be straight with me about it, okay? You have got to invest. It's profoundly important that you invest in being trained by people who have experience and have been down the road before and have experienced both failure and success in getting their message out, okay? This is hugely important because it not only will save you time, which is a limited commodity, but it will also spare you a lot of heartache, a lot of failure, a lot of laps around the wilderness that are unnecessary. And the problem today is you've got a lot of people, especially if you watch YouTube and you see the ads pop up, or you're on Facebook and you pay attention to the sponsored ads, you've got a lot of people claiming that they're going to help you get your message out. Or if you're starting a business, they're going to help you make a huge impact. And of course, it's usually a promise of making a lot of money. This is how I did it, blah, blah, blah. And in most of those cases, and I'll just use the author space, right? If you're an author and you want to write a book, I have checked out some of these people who pop up on YouTube or Facebook ads. I don't even know who they are. And they claim they're going to teach you how to write your book and how to make money off of it and how to publish it and all this kind of stuff. I've looked at those people and I've done a little investigation. Virtually none of those people, actually, I would say in every case, none of those people are published by a credible publishing house. None of them. Number two, most of them self-published their book, and usually it's one book, right? And then in other cases, you look at the Amazon scoring and so forth, they're not selling, 1,500,000 is the ranking, okay? And yet, Josh, for reasons I'll never understand, people are spending lots of money to get into their programs. Why are they doing that? These are amateurs. These are hobbyists. In many cases, they're scam artists. They have no credibility. They can't show you, hey, I've written X number of best-selling books. You know, I am published by X number of legitimate, high quality, credible publishing houses. And yet they're trying to teach people to do these things and they're charging a lot of money to do it. So here's what I would say. Invest in training by people who have actually done it, whatever it is you're looking for. Like, for example, you're somebody who I respect, especially in the space of exercise. And I've gotten some advice from you on that subject, personal. So you're excellent at that. Consequently, I would say, find out about the people who you are wanting to learn from and look at their track record and see if they actually have been successful and what they're seeking to train you to do. And so I would say if they have a message, I would recommend highly that they invest in the Scribe online training, which you're a part of. You took it yourself, Josh, because I know of nothing that will help a person from A to Izzard. It gets into blogging and how to start a blog. It gets into the power of podcasts and how to do that. It gets into how to build an audience. It gets into how to monetize a blog and especially how to write a book in a short space of time, how to get it published, how to promote it, which is the hard part, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all come out of firsthand experience. So that's what I would say to them. Invest in that. It really comes down to, and answer your question, you've got to invest in training from people who know what they're doing and have proven it. Because without that, you're going to be spinning your wheels. You're going to be frustrated. You're going to fail, without doubt, in a way that will probably discourage you from continuing to play the game.
I really loved how you talked about finding a mentor and a coach. You know, I'm a coach. I've been a coach in multiple different areas of my life, from corporate to, you know, you mentioned fitness, and now I'm leading a group of men and we're going deeper in our spiritual, personal, professional development. So Frank, what I loved about what you summarized there was that a coach takes you from point A to point B, and they can help you bypass the pain. They can speed up the journey. And there's also something required of you, because whenever we follow someone, we must make an investment. I would even say this, and I would like to take you here for a minute. Wouldn't you say that the first century disciples made an investment to follow Jesus?
Oh my goodness. An investment that can't be calculated. I mean, for most of them, it was their life, and sometimes physically. So to be a Christian in the first century, you were baptized. That was no empty ritual. You were basically dying to your entire life. You were dying to the systems of this world, and you were giving your allegiance to someone who was not embraced by the world, someone whom the world hated and put to death, by the way. And so many of the Christians were also equally put to death because of their faith. But even those who weren't, their entire life was given over to, in every aspect, Jesus of Nazareth. So investment is kind of a mild way of putting it. You know, it was total radical allegiance.
So when it comes to coaching, I firmly believe, Frank, and I agree with you, and I've invested a lot of money over the course of my life in terms of time, but also dollars to get a new skill, to fast forward time, or to get me from point A to point B quicker and avoid the pain at the same time. And I believe when we talk about Scribe and what you put together here, that's what it in fact does for people. You're actually mentoring people that are looking for someone that's been there to take them through the process, show them the steps of how to release their work as a content creator, get it published, or even if they want to go the self-published route, do that as well. But most of all, get it heard so ultimately they can make an impact. So Frank, I want to tell you, I mean, we were talking right before we started the podcast too. I'm a member of Scribe. I purchased Scribe from you. I made an investment in myself to learn different ways, strategies, tools, tactics of how I could take my book, The Standard, and get it out to the next level. And I'm really excited because I started putting some of those things into place right away. And I can tell you that in the last month, generally, if I rewind the clock a couple months ago, I think my website traffic was somewhere in the 10 to 15,000 range. It's like 10 to 15,000 visitors a month were coming to standard59.com. And now, because I've used specific strategies that I used from Scribe, I just got a report just last week that showed me my website traffic was up to 40,000 visitors from last month, 30,000 in the US, just under 30,000, and the rest from around the world, which is pretty crazy to me.
Yep, that's it.
So what you have here is really impactful because I've seen the fruit of it with what I'm doing right now and getting my message out around the standard, discovering Jesus as the standard for masculinity. So why don't you take us, for those specifically that are thinking about writing a book, maybe they've started it, maybe they believe they have a message, whether they're at the beginning of the journey, maybe you're one of the people like that falls in the statistics of, hey, I started this, but like we talked about earlier, I just haven't finished it yet. And then maybe you're at the end of the process where you're just about done or you're getting ready, but you're not sure, okay, I have it finished, but now what do I do? How does Scribe help them? And if you could introduce us to really what is in Scribe, I think that would be great for people that are listening that want to learn more about this program.
Yeah. And even for those of you who have already authored books like yourself, you already had your book out when you took the Scribe training. It is for them also because it gives you steps, very practical steps that have been proven to work on how to take that book to the next level and also how to make your next book. Most people are not one-time authors, even beyond where the first book went. Basically, this is the origin of it, and this is what's in it. In 2008, my books started to get international acclaim. And since that time, I have received countless emails and letters asking me dozens of questions about how do you write a book? What's your process? How do you get it published? What about self-publishing? Because you've published some self-published books, people would say. How do you do that? What about editing? What about promotion? I've written a book. I can't get anybody beyond my family to buy it. And so what I did is I took all these questions over the years, going back to 2008, and I held a three-day intensive event. It was a live event. And Josh, I loaded both barrels and I fired away until I had nothing left. And I had a female New York Times bestselling author who presented with me. And we shared everything we know about publishing, writing, editing, promotion, everything from A to Izzard that I learned and discovered since I began writing books. Someone said, the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago. The next best time is today. Your most valuable asset, my most valuable asset is our time. It's our time. And what Scribe does is it collapses time by giving people a step-by-step proven process. See, that live event was videotaped. And so we recorded it and we make the entire event, the whole training online. And then we added a bunch of other stuff to it, resources like Prolific, the course I talked about earlier in the interview, My Creativity, Productivity, Mission Finding, Goal Setting Hacks, How I'm as Productive as I've Been Able to Be. All of that is in Prolific. Well, that's one of the bonuses that people get when they sign up for Scribe. The Buzz Seminar is another seminar that we recorded. That's all about blogging, how to start a blog, build an audience, how to monetize a blog even. And you know, Josh, when we held the Buzz Seminar, which is, again, part of Scribe. You get it as a bonus. It's all audio. You listen to it. Everything is there for you, the tools, etc. When we started it, blogging was very popular. Today, a lot of the bloggers who were top-tiered bloggers 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, they've stopped. That means the space has opened up. Best time to start a blog is now. And if you want to be a writer, an author of a book, that's one of the secret sauces, and I explain it in the Scribe training. It gives you a step-by-step process that's proven. I have written a total of 34 books, last count, 15 professionally published by top-tiered publishers, 9 of them bestsellers. Beyond that, all of my books together have sold 600,000 copies plus. These are just the professionally published books. I'm only saying that to communicate that this is not theory. All right. It's not like the Facebook ads and the YouTube ads that you see by authors who are unknown. They've never professionally published a book. They may have written one or two that they self-published. published and they're wanting to charge you an arm and a leg to train you. No, this all comes out of experience. There is a link in the show notes. And once you get it, you have it for life. You could take it at your own pace.
Yeah, well, you're totally aligned with your message. That's the way you preach. It's the way you write your books. It's what you shared earlier. So it only makes sense that this is something you can deliver because you lived it in terms of all the things, all the components. You know, what I love about Scribe, Frank, is that I think when I got it, I binged like for a day straight. I went through everything. It might have been over the course of a few days. I took it all in. I took some notes, but then I found myself going back to the parts I needed, and the workbooks were great. And you know, you talked about blogging, and I started implementing that strategy when it was the right time for me. I didn't do it immediately, but when I did, that's immediately when I started seeing results. It just started happening month after month. And I believe that's definitely one of the strategies for why we're reaching, you know, right around 40K visitors a month on Standard 59. So what I love is all the resources and the tools, because I think with other programs, it's like you learn how to write or you learn how to self-publish, but with this, it was like multiple courses in one for different steps in the journey. And I could go back, and I still go back. I actually use the resources still when I want to implement something different.
Yeah, no, that's how a lot of people use it, Josh. And that's wonderful testimony. And also when people get the Scribe online training, they're also invited into a closed Facebook group. And so they have access to me and the other presenters. They can ask questions. There's over 100 people in the group, and people often will post questions and other authors will answer them as well. Everyone who's taken it has just raved about it. The testimonials on the actual Scribe page, I think, speak for itself.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Frank, for opening that up for us. And if you're listening to this, you really are unique, because I had to wait until it opened up, and I've seen it and I watched it as it opens up just a few times a year. So take advantage of that. If that's something you're interested in, or you have a message and you feel like you need the next step, you need the community, you need the guided expertise to help you launch that message, I full-heartedly endorse Scribe. I believe it will help you do that.